and on October 6th, and I called the meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and have been supplied with meeting access instructions. Ms. Poe, will you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davey? Mr. Dinar?
Present.
Dr. Catarino?
You're muted, Dr.
Present.
Dr. Medina?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
Mr. Nguyen? We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Poe. Before we get into anything else, Dr. Malott, we really appreciate you being here today. Could you give us sort of just a quick rule of thumb, you know, how much time we have with you today here?
Yeah, I'm surprised I don't see my video on or my face. I don't know what's wrong. Or maybe it's... Well, you get to see the beautiful trees in Flagstaff. You know, I have a convening going on, so I found a room upstairs, and I can be here maybe through to lunch.
Uh-huh. Okay. We do appreciate that, Dr. Malott. Thank you. So let's... go into some of the, I think we can get through maybe like five or six items on the agenda, and Ms. Packinen and Ms. Michelson will help us with that. But let's go through some of the remarks and announcements. Please note that any time stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. As we know today, we began around 9:30. The board may suspend the discussion of one agenda item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to the former agenda item at a later time. The board may also reorder non-timed items. To the board members, I thank you in advance for using that raise hand feature of Zoom, as it helps facilitate my ability to recognize when you wish to speak. The board survey, the board encourages everyone in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. You'll find the link to the link in the meeting agenda that is posted on the board's website for the board survey. I want to recognize all board members for your hard work. Each board member spends many hours preparing for these meetings, so I do appreciate all of your hard work. And same goes for our staff. I mean, they spend hours and hours and days in getting prepared for this meeting, so I do sincerely appreciate that as well. On continuing education credits, attendance at this meeting is eligible for continuing education if it is more than 4 hours long. But I anticipate this meeting will not be going on for more than 4 hours. But if it does, then watch out for the codes that will be announced at random intervals during the meeting. And then you can use those codes to obtain CLE credit, or continuing education credit. Pardon me, not CLE. Call to the public. Those wishing to address the board do not need to request permission in advance. However, the board will limit the number of persons speaking during this time to a reasonable number on any public comment matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 3 minutes to do so. According to ARS Section 38-431.02, subsection H, the board can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. The board members may not discuss the matter with each other or with the member of the public addressing the board. The only option available is to instruct staff to place the topic on a future agenda if applicable. If you wish to speak, please unmute your line, state your name, and I'll call on you. Yes.
Hi, I'm John DeBacco. I'd like to speak, please.
Yes, Dr. DeBacco, welcome back to the board. I hear that you have been a past board member. We appreciate you attending today, and I know you're speaking as a member of the public, so you may do so now. Thank you.
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Briefly, I was on the board from 2010 until 2015, and the outgoing governor mandated that the behavior analyst should be regulated by the Board of Examiners. Frankly, I had concerns back then about that. Primary concerns were about the burden that the staff would face, as well as I thought there were major differences in terms of selection, training, scope of practice between the two. Regardless, it was a mandate, and I think the board and behavior analysts did the best they could. Fast forward to the present situation, I have continuing concerns, and they're somewhat amplified, quite frankly, in terms of the proposal that the behavior analysts have made regarding co-locating and sharing staff. I think there will be a number of problems with that. And I won't say much more. You probably have a letter that I sent to the board, and it outlines some of my concerns. Frankly, my superordinate wish is that my letter might prompt some more discussion, pros and cons about the proposal, but also real consideration about the burden that would place on the staff. And you have an amazing staff, and I just want to take a minute to recognize all of the staff, but Heidi in particular. I've worked with her recently on two different committees, and on a scale of 1 to 10, she's an 11. I hope you guys realize what an asset she is. I'm going to leave it at that. And again, my intent was to bring forth some issues that might prompt some discussion, and hopefully all the stakeholders will be involved in that discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. DiBacco, and your comments are well received. And again, since we can't discuss them, I'm sure the staff will bring this back as an agenda item at a future meeting. We appreciate all you do, and I know you have volunteered with the board on many occasions. So I thank you for your service. So let's go to agenda item number 5, council update. Ms. Galvin, do you have any updates for the board?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. So on to the consent agenda. Are there any recusals from items on the consent agenda?
Mr. Chair, I wasn't involved with one of the executive sessions that we did on September 1st. So I'd be recused from being involved with asking that approval at this time, just for that one item.
Thank you. That's 6A, 6A, the third bullet point, or the second bullet point.
Correct. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other recusals? Hearing none, does any board member wish to remove an item from the consent agenda for independent discussion and action? Hearing no requests, do I have a motion to approve the items on the consent agenda?
So moved.
Seconded.
Thank you. This time, Dr. Stewart wasn't in the front lines. First by Dr. Medina and second by Dr. Caterino. A motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Abstaining? Your recusal is noted, Dr. Stanoff, on that one item, but the motion unanimously carries. So I think, Ms. Packard, at this point, can we quickly go to some of the applications on the agenda?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So the leads for those items, that would be Dr. Stenhoff for 14 and Dr. Caterino for 16.
Okay, thank you. So let's go to number 14, which is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding applications for behavior analyst licensure and telehealth registry authorizations. Dr. Stenhoff, will you please get us started?
Yes. Okay, so the first application is for Lauren Blair. The CBA recommended that Ms. Blair's application be forwarded to the board for approval after she supplied evidence that she recorded her open container and operating well intoxicated license to the BACB, the Michigan Licensing Board. Ms. Blair provided the receipt of a report to the BACB, but has not received, but we have not received an image of the receipt of the Michigan Licensing Board receiving that. The board's board staff did note on the Michigan report that she did not report the charge to Michigan within the time frame required by their statutes. So I was curious if Ms. Blair is present today to address that issue.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so Ms. Blair, would you mind just kind of summarizing and providing an explanation regarding the delayed submission to Michigan?
Sure. So the incident happened when I was not currently working. I wasn't working with any clients. And I was out of the country in Canada helping my sick aunt. She had terminal pancreatic cancer. So I took some time off. And so after discussing with a couple other supervisors, you know, they had stated that since I wasn't working with clients and it didn't happen on the job, that I didn't need to report it. During the last board meeting, they advised me that I should be report. That's something to report. So I did it right away. I would have had no problem reporting it, but I was advised poorly to not have to report.
Okay. All right. And then, you have reported the BACB, you've reported Michigan. We, board staff, do you know whether we've received a receipt from, Michigan at this point of whether that's been received? Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Dr. Stanhoff, I don't, just given, our previous experiences working with the Michigan board, insights into the Michigan board, I would not expect necessarily a affirmation that she submitted. They certainly would, if such an affirmation were to ever come, it would be some months away. So I think we just need to acknowledge that while the BACB does a great job of letting someone know that they've submitted something or providing that confirmation, we can't expect the same of the Michigan Division of Licensing and Regulation. So this board may need to decide, you know, are you willing to accept, you know, what the applicant has supplied, and then require the applicant to keep the board apprised of what, if anything, the Michigan board does at some point in the unknown future.
And Dr. Stenhoff and board members, I think it would be helpful for Ms. Blair to clarify if, since submitting her self-report to the BACB and the Michigan board, if she's heard from either entity in any capacity. So I think that would be helpful for her to share that right now.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson.
I did receive an email. The case has been reviewed and it has been closed by the BACB. I can forward any information to you guys. There was no further action that they provided to me, so.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Blair.
Thank you, Dr. Stanhoff. I see Dr. Caterino's hand up. Do you have any questions for Dr. Stanhoff or for the applicant?
I did have a question for the applicant. On the BACB report, self-report, it seemed to be confusing to me because you mentioned that, I hope I'm allowed to say this, that you had a caregiver in place since 2021. But on the second question of the BACB, they asked, do you currently have a care provider for your physical and mental health condition or substance use disorder? And you indicated no. I was confused by that difference.
Sure. So,
excuse me, Ms. Blair, I'm sorry. Is this something we need to go into executive session to discuss?
I don't know.
If that's okay, it's kind of a personal topic, but if if it's easier just to...
Ms. Galvin, I know Ms. Blair is affirmed that it would be okay, but I think it would be appropriate to do so, to go into executive session to talk about this privately.
If that's a motion, Dr. Stenhoff, I'll second it.
Okay, it is a motion, Mr. Diner. Thank you.
And would that include to review confidential health information and to receive legal advice if necessary?
Ms. Galvin, yes.
Okay.
Thank you. My second stands. So there's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. All right, looks like we have everybody back in open session. It is 9:57. Are there any more questions for Ms. Blair at this time? Hearing none, let's then begin a discussion and deliberation of this matter since Dr. Stenhoff got us started. Do you want to get us started with the discussion as well?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Blair provided a rationale for the delay in reporting to Michigan due to, you know, her current place in life at that time. I also believe that the BACB, dismissed her case with them for her reporting of the substance or the operating with well intoxicated. I think we're okay moving forward to approve this application. That's my opinion. So.
Any other discussion item before we move into motions? Hearing none, is there a motion, Dr. Stenhoff? I almost heard you make one.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I make a motion that we approve Ms. Blair's application for licensure for behavior analysis.
Second.
There's a motion and there's a second. I think I heard Dr. Stewart and Dr. Medina, so I don't know which
one.
You
can give it to Dr. Stewart. Let's get him started.
So there's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstaining?
Abstaining. Abstention.
One abstention, Dr. Caterino. The motion carries. So the next item is 14B for Chloe Farberger, and Dr. Stenhoff will again get us started.
Yeah, thank you. Ms. Farberger is applying for telehealth permission to conduct telehealth in the state of Arizona. According to the required information from ARS 36-3606, the healthcare name was provided proof of professional licensure. Healthcare provider's address was given to us as well, and evidence of professional liability insurance. And there was a designated appointed statutory agent for service in this state. In my review, she met all the requirements, and I'd recommend that we approve this request to conduct telehealth here.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. Before we get into the motion, let's see if Ms. Farberger is here, and if you would like to make a statement, you may do so at this time.
Mr. Chair, with Dr. Caterino abstaining, I just want to make sure we have quorum for this item. I'm not sure that we do.
No, you do not.
Do I need to reconsider my vote?
Whether to recuse is a personal decision. I don't know what your relationship is with the applicant or why it is that you recused. And you don't have to.
But I do not have a personal relationship. I could change my vote to yes.
So just to clarify, the abstention loses quorum, but if the vote is no or yes, then we still have quorum.
That's correct. I thought we were on Ms. Farberger, so you're correct. You still participated in the vote, and Mr. Dinar is correct. It does not change the status of the quorum. So we're fine.
Okay.
I apologize. I went to Chloe Farberger.
Thank you for the clarification, Ms. Michelson, or seeking clarification on that. So we are on 14B, Ms. Farberger. And if Ms. Farberger is present, you can unmute yourself and make a statement at this time. Hearing none, let's then go back to Dr. Stenhoff to begin discussion, deliberations, or a possible motion.
I'm going to just propose a motion that we approve permission to conduct telehealth in the state of Arizona.
Second.
There's a motion and second by Dr. Stewart. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstaining? Any recused? Hearing none, the motion carries. So we are done with item number 14. I believe, Ms. Pakkanen, we can go to 16 or 17.
16 would be great, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So let's go to 16. And the 16A is Aaron Hanksmore, PhD, EPPP application certs. So 16 is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding psychologist applications for EPPP only, EPPP and licensure by waiver.
Mr. Chair, I am so sorry. Yes, I'm reminded Dr. Malott is recused from these applications.
It looks like Dr. Medina is raising her hand too.
I recuse from 16A.
Mm-hmm. So I think we'll have to move all of these to the next meeting then.
Yes. What about B and C and D?
Well, if Dr. Malott is recused from all of them, then we don't have quorum.
But what about Dr. Medina?
I can do B, C, D, but if Dr. Malott is recusing from all of them, I believe then we cannot.
Mr. Chair, committee members, board members, this is Kathy. May I?
Yes, please.
The last one, D, for Dr. Dylan Richard, is not.
I'm not recused.
Yes.
I'm not recused either.
You should have a quorum for that one.
Okay, I appreciate that. Yes, so let's do 16D and then we'll move A, B, and C to a future meeting. So, Dr. Catrino, do you want to get us started with?
Yes. Dr. Dylan Richard graduated from University of Southern Mississippi in July of 21. It's an APA accredited program. He did an internship at the VA and a postdoc at the VA, so he has over 4,000 hours. He did pass EPPP Part 1 in January. Mississippi, it's required to have an oral exam, and he knew he was moving to Arizona, so he didn't take that exam. So he wasn't fully licensed, but he would like to be licensed in Arizona, and we don't require the oral exam. So I would, I do not see any issues with his application.
So are there any questions or discussion items? Hearing none, Dr. Catrino, could you make a motion?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion that Dylan Richard's application by waiver for licensure be approved.
Second.
Sure. There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Abstaining? Recused? Hearing none, the motion carries. So, Ms. Pakkanen, I think 17 is the next one we can go to.
Yes, that is an application matter with potential time frame implications. So, yes, please.
Okay. So let's go to item number 17, discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding request for testing accommodations submitted by Lorinda Cumming, PhD. Ms. Folks, would you please provide a summary of this matter to the board?
Yes, Mr. Chair, board members. This Lorinda Cumming, Dr. Lorinda Cumming, her initial application was approved in November of 2021. It was for a temporary license, but then she notified us subsequently that she is no longer in a postdoc. So then the board approved an exam and licensure application for her in December of 2021. Dr. Cummings took the ECCC after several extensions on March 29th, 2023, and did not meet the pass point. She submitted a reapplication, which was then approved in June of 2023. And at the early part of this month, on the 6th of September, she requested accommodations for testing. And we did receive a letter from her provider. And the provider's letter recommended extra time. I emailed Dr. Cumming regarding this and did tell her that historically the board has, when the provider did not specify how much extra time, that historically the board has given time and a half, and Dr. Cummings felt that that would be sufficient, so we did not obtain another letter from her provider regarding this. And that is my summary.
Thank you, Ms. Folks. Do any board members have questions for Ms. Folks? All right, so if no further questions, any discussion? So I think, I mean, based on my review of the materials, it looks like, the standard practice of the board is to give time and a half. And that's a reasonable accommodation. So I think there was some issue with like temporary licensure, if I'm not mistaken. I just wanted clarification on that. Ms. Folks or a staff member, if you have any clarification on that.
Yes, Mr. Chair, board members, when Dr. Cumming initially applied for licensure, she applied for a temporary license and ECCC. After the board approved the temporary license application, Dr. Cumming informed staff that she was no longer in a postdoctoral supervised mm-hmm. experience and requested to change her application to examine licensure. So that is what we did as staff, and the board approved the exam and licensure application on December 10th, 2021.
So currently, is there a active temporary license, or is this just a simple examined licensure application?
Correct. She was approved with, okay. After the approval of the exam and license application, she took the exam and did not meet the pass point. She then submitted a reapplication, which was approved by the board on June 7th, 2nd, 2023. That is the approval that is now active and in place, and she is requesting accommodations for that exam.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I was just sort of a little bit confused with that. So is there a motion at this time? Dr. Medina.
I move to approve Dr. Cummings' request for extra testing, for the testing accommodation of extra time. And I suggest granting time and a half.
I second.
There is a motion by Dr. Medina, second by Dr. Caterino. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstaining? Recused? Hearing none, the motion carries. So I think, Ms. Pakkinen, can we go back to item 7 or item 8, or would you prefer going to some of the cases?
Let's actually, Mr. Chair, agenda item 21 is an application related matter, again, with time frame implications. This is Ms. Folk's agenda item as well.
Okay, let's actually go to 21. Thank you. Discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding retake request submitted by Jennifer Nansen, PsyD, supervised temporary license holder number PSY slash T dash bunch of zeros ending with two. Ms. Folks, will you please provide a summary to the board?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. Dr. Nansen has had a temporary license with us since August 7th, 2018. On August 4th, 2021, she took advantage of the option to extend her temporary license for 18 months, which once the state of emergency was lifted, brought her to an expiration date of September 30th, 2023. Dr. Nansen has taken the ECCC three times and has not met the pass point. She sent in a retake request when her temporary license was active on September 11th, and it was administratively complete on the same day. Therefore, it was placed on the board's agenda for consideration. We have not had this happen before where the temporary license expired before the board meeting could take place, but because it was administratively complete within time, we put this on the board for consideration on the board agenda. And that's my summary.
Thank you, Ms. Folks. Are there any questions for Ms. Folks?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes, Dr. Dina.
So can we renew her temporary license, or she met the maximum?
Board Chair, Dr. Malott, the maximum has been met, and according to statute, the board cannot renew, extend, or in any other way deal with the temporary license. I would like to also note that in the past, when an approval for a retake request took place and then the temporary license expired before that year was up, the temporary license holder, ex-temporary license holder, was allowed, that approval stayed in place, and they were allowed to get extensions. And because the approval took place before the temporary license expired, we treated it as if the person still had the temporary license. They just could not submit another retake request once their application, once their license expired. However, because Dr. Nansen submitted it and it was administratively complete before her license expired, we, given the historic decisions of the board towards support of these applicants, we thought that it might be something that the board would like to discuss and determine how to handle.
So, Ms. Folks, thank you for that. I have no problems approving her to retake the exam. You know, she's got a good study plan in place. I'm okay with that. Could we move her to a different category like the other applicant we just discussed to approval to sit for the exam and licensure upon passing, since the temporary license doesn't apply anymore?
Mr. Chair, Dr. Malott, she would have to apply anew for exam and licensure or ECCC only, and then it would have to go through the approval process with the application review committee and the board in order for that to take place.
Okay, so her status right now, so if we approve, I mean, I think we can approve her to take the exam. What happens to her status?
She will have an approval on file for, you know, for the board for the next year, and any extension she may request, as long as the rules are met, And that would be it. Then she, if she does not pass this time, she would need to apply anew for exam and licensure, or it will be only to take the exam again.
And if she passes, then it's all this is, then we're done.
Yes, then we're done. And she will still need to apply for licensure by waiver if she passes.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Mullard, and thank you, Ms. Folks. So I guess, since the application was administratively complete, does that affect the board's ability to sort of retroactively, if you will, approve or extend the temporary license?
No, we cannot extend the temporary license, but we can go ahead. I can make a motion to approve the retake of the exam.
Second.
All right, there's a motion by Dr. Mullard and second by Dr. Medina. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Abstaining? Recused? Hearing none, the motion carries.
And Mr. Chair, now number 7 would be, appropriate to move to. Dr. Manson is still present. And I can sort of queue up this agenda item if you'd like.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the board, you'll remember that during the 2023 legislative session, the Arizona Psychological Association requested a bill that would establish requirements for qualifying psychologists to prescribe certain treatment medications after having demonstrated, you know, meeting those qualifications. The qualifications would be established by statute, and then, of course, there would be associated regulatory responsibilities for those professionals. And the legislation did pass one chamber, and then in the second chamber, the members directed ASPA, the association, to continue meeting with stakeholders to work out some resolutions to some of their concerns. So I've kept in touch with Dr. Manson. We had, I believe, at least one conversation since the conclusion of the last session. And so the intent was that they would come back to the board and sort of present, you know, where their stakeholder discussion developments, how that would be manifesting in likely new proposed legislation in 2024. So Dr. Manson, I should explain, she is the president of the association. She has brought forward the document that you have been supplied for your review today. And I'm sure she would like to give you an overview and answer your questions. I will have just a couple of comments to offer I hope help inform the discussion, but I think we want to give the floor now to Dr. Manson.
Thank you, Ms. Peck, and then Dr. Manson, welcome to the board. We really appreciate all the work that you have done and your organization has done on this bill. So take it away.
Thank you. Thank you. May I have the floor? It sounds like yes. So I'll just give a little bit of a brief review. Is that we have met with the Arizona Psychiatric Consortium as our largest collaborator with their highest level of concerns. All other collaborators have typically been very positive and had no actual changes to the bill. And then the other local collaborators and associations all deferred to the psychiatric consortium. At this stage, we have met every single request from the psychiatric consortium. And this is a bill where we will be the only, at this point, full-time collaborative prescribers. So if you know, PAs have received the ability to be fully independent as far as prescribers in Arizona. They were the last collaborative prescribers here. So they do have a few thousand hours to have to complete prior to being able to be fully independent in Arizona, but we would be the only ones that will be a collaborative prescriber. So just to let you know that. So at this stage, every other prescriber is fully independent. With this proposal, we actually go above all of the initial NPPA requirements as far as being able to have psychiatric training and specific psychopharmacology training. In addition, we have information required as far as undergraduate courses that have also been placed on here that individuals have to do, in addition to, as you probably already aware of, the additional master's degree in psychopharmacology that they would have to do after they have already had their doctorate degree conferred. So just recognizing all these elements that are there. In addition, the license is going to be limited. As of right now, it is limited related to not prescribing to individuals who are pregnant, not prescribing to children under the age of 12. Those are our two major limitations. And after that, in order to be able to prescribe for other elements, as far as children between 13 and 18, they will need to, or I should say older adults, sorry about that, they will need to have their physician collaborator state that they agree with their training, their education, and their abilities to prescribe to that population. So that is all built into this proposal. And we have met with the board, the medical board here in Arizona, multiple times now, with Heidi actually a couple times and without as well. And we actually have very positive, you know, relationship and communication with them related to this. And how it would look related to the board is actually very similar to how the ABA and clinical psychology works here now. So you would have, when there would be someone that would come up for a concern, they would then, the medical board, a concern related to prescribing practices, the medical board would review that, give their recommendation, et cetera, to you all so that you have that to be able to reference and move forward on. So that is the current status of the bill and most of the highlights of the bill. I will welcome questions from anyone.
Thank you, Dr. Manson. So I had questions in terms of just to aid my understanding of this. So the psychology board is the licensing authority for the prescribing psychologists. And if there is a concern relating to prescriptions or prescribing authority, then we, if I'm reading right, we shall refer. So we have no option. We have to refer that to the medical board or the osteopathic board. And then those, whichever board we refer to, depending on the collaborative practice, you know, where the agreement is, that board gives us the recommendation. And then this board, the psychology board, takes the sort of final action, if you will, on that. Am I correct in all of that?
Yes.
Okay. So my question, I mean, I know you have, you know, spoken many times with the medical board, so I just want to avoid any future friction if I can with this arrangement. I mean, if I'm assuming the medical and osteopathic boards are okay with sort of being almost like a complaint screening committee for this board with these kinds of prescribing cases.
Yeah. In fact, they requested that.
Okay.
So, yeah, they because they believe that clinical psychology, as far as clinical psychologists, should remain under this board and be able to do that. So
wonderful. I mean, I think one of my criticisms of the previous version was that we didn't know how that arrangement would work out. So I'm glad that this bill at least spells out the that arrangement to the satisfaction of all of the boards concerned. My just one sort of query on that is I'm looking at, I think, page 6 or page 8, and the added language says the board shall refer any charges involving prescribing by prescribing psychologists to, and, you know, it goes on. So my question is regarding charges. So I'm familiar with the psychology statutes, you know, chapter 19.1. And I think we have used the word charges in sort of charges as in criminal charges and charges as in, you know, the board can charge a particular fee. Whereas we have used the word allegation in terms of, well, if there's a complaint and an allegation that, you know, some bad things have happened, then it's really an allegation. It's not a charge. So just a sort of cosmetic error, maybe like a clarification that the bill can benefit from, which I wanted to offer to you.
Thank you. I'll send this off. This is actually written by the legislators that worked collaboratively with our main, you know, bill writers. So they used that language and pulled it forward. I know I used complaints originally, but I don't know if there was maybe a miscommunication where they thought that's what it was. So I'll go back just to clarify. If they keep it, it's because of something else as far as the law, and it's a requirement of how they have to have it written in statute. I know several times I've gone back saying that I was confused by the writing, and they said, nope, that's what's required. So I said, okay, but I will bring that up. Thank you.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes it, you know, the term is used interchangeably, right? But you know, for it, as far as the psychology statutes, you know, there's a difference.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Any other questions for Dr. Madsen?
I have a question.
Yes,
Mr. Dana. Yeah, I just thank you for all of the work. I was reading through the blue text, which I'm assuming is the changes to the original bill that was submitted the previous year, and it appears that you've worked really, really hard with all of the medical different groups, and I appreciate all of the work and the conceding that has also happened as a result of licensed psychologists. I prefer the term licensed psychologist because clinical psychology is a discipline, so we don't license clinical psychologists, so we license psychologists. My question is, I am trying to understand collaborative authority. And does that mean, you know, most psychologists have independent practices. Does that mean they have to be like PAs, you know, have to be in practice in the same office? I'm just trying to understand that aspect of collaborative authority.
Yes. Yeah, so it will be... it is very similar to how you have perhaps perceived or seen PAs in the past. So a collaborative prescribing means that you have a physician that oversees your cases, your prescription privileges, and meets with you on a regular basis. Now, this person may be employed at your practice, but they do not have to be. So they can be outside of that practice, but you do still have to meet with them regularly. So that's how that prescription works. So oftentimes they will have a dual practice, and it, you know, again, it just depends on how it is set up for that specific licensed psychologist.
Okay. Thank you. And do you know if other states have this similar setup, or is Arizona the only one for prescribing psychologists?
Yeah, no, other states do have that, this very similar setup and establishment. Other states have also, we are going to be one of the most restrictive states. Just to note that at this point. So that's where we will stand, is at this point, we would be the most restrictive. Okay. We are still, I will say very openly, we are still working with the Arizona Psychiatric Consortium. So we are hoping that they do not return with additional pieces after, you know, almost a year of new pieces being added. I'm hoping that this is everything as last time we spoke, they said it was. So knocking on wood, everybody. But just so you know, if we do have additional changes, I'll send them to Heidi to maybe come and present again to the board if needed. I saw Dr. Stewart, but I know Dr. Dinar.
Yeah, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Dinar. Yes, Dr. Manson. One of the breakout sessions at AZPA was with a prescribing psychologist from Albuquerque, and certainly New Mexico, you know, jumped through a lot of hoops before they got their psychologist prescriptive authority completed. Going back to Dr. Malott's question and your response about dual practice and on-site, I think the language I read was that the collaborative physician does not have to be on site. So just to clarify, thank you.
Yes. Thank you for that. They do not have to be on site. They can be, but they do not. They just have to have the requirement of working with them on a regular basis and overseeing. Can I make another note, Dr. Dinar? Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Just to also provide another note, New Mexico recently is switching to medical board. oversight related to being able to actually do even more prescribing practices. And so we also actually have three large-scale medical degrees, MD-specific degrees, universities in the United States that are actually considering bringing on prescribing psychologists into their university setting. So lots of movement on this happening. And so those are all state degrees, by the way, state schools.
Any other questions? Yes, Ms. Packen, and then Ms. Gavin.
I'm actually fine giving Ms. Galvin the floor first.
And Dr. Manston, I'm just wondering, there are provisions in the proposed language that talk about the board developing rules for the denial, suspension, or revocation of prescribing privileges. Is there, or was there any discussion about other disciplinary terms that could be imposed? For instance, a probation that might include some sort of terms that would help educate and rehabilitate the prescribing psychologist instead of going straight to suspension or revocation. Perhaps probation would include, you know, continuing CE or extra coursework or a more restrictive collaboration agreement.
Sutner, my discussion, oh, can I, thank you. May I reply? Thank you, Dr. Shire. Under my discussions with the medical board, they are open to exactly that suggestion. They were noting reference that this was open enough in this statute to be able to, or potential to be able to have their own decision-making on that. If you believe from reading it, it is not, and it's too tight, then I can go back and see if there's additional language that can be utilized.
Reading this proposed language as it is, it only provides for suspension, revocation, or denial.
Okay. I'll go back to them and ensure that that is added because that was the discussion piece. They helped with adding the language in, but perhaps it was just something that was missed in that.
And I can't provide advice on, you know, pending legislation. I was just seeking clarification.
No, I appreciate that.
So, Ms. Galvin, I hope I can speak. Just wondering, is it possible, rather than stating the different, you know, could it be more generic language, you know, following the disciplinary procedures in the psychology statutes? Because in different adjudications we've made, if we find a psychologist who has, say, we think is not competent to do forensic work, we have put a restriction on their, you know, we that is part of our sanctions, saying, you know, you are not allowed to do any more forensic testing. So, I mean, our statutes allow us, I think, if, say, we will do the final adjudication once we get the recommendation from the board. So we could say, you know, well, you can continue to provide psychotherapy. You are not allowed to provide prescribing. You know, you've lost your prescription authority. But so maybe the language could be more generic, you know. And, you know, reference our statute saying, you know, following the, you know, the different disciplinary levels of sanction. I don't know. I'm just throwing out that suggestion.
Yes. And I think, I mean, in follow up to what Dr. Mulat said and what Ms. Galvin started with, I think the idea is if this board is in charge of making the final determination of, you know, what disciplinary action to take or non-disciplinary action to take. I think the idea is, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Manson, but you aren't necessarily restricting this board's ability to use any available, you know, tools, let's say, that this board has to to impose sanctions, not all the way from, you know, letter of concern to revocation or suspension and everything in between, right? So maybe that language, if there is clarity in that, that might help resolve that issue. And I don't think that would be a point of contention, because the other thing is, if the medical board and the osteopathic board are giving us recommendations, if they read our statutes as restricting their ability to give us recommendations, then that also sort of gums up the works a little bit and maybe helps unstreamline a process that was meant to be streamlined. Ms. Pakkanen.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm going to try to answer this question or make a suggestion so Ms. Galvin doesn't feel that, you know, we're putting her in a position where, you know, she really shouldn't be. But I was very interested in the direction Dr. Malott was going with her suggestion. I think that by citing that, you know, the board would then, at following a recommendation, the board may take any of the actions that are identified in 3220, 81 subsections, whatever they are, then, you know, I think that sort of puts the full array of possibilities, you know, before this board. I don't know if we want to get so granular as to say that the recommendations from the medical boards should consist of the findings of fact and the conclusions of law. I think maybe that's a conversation that the executive directors need to have with you, Dr. Manson, so we can figure that out. I mean, recommendations sort of, how structured do they need to be? How precise do they need to be? What do they involve? What do they not involve? I think having a shared understanding of that would be important, so that those boards are clear on what their expectations are to prepare, and our board knows what to do with what we receive. So hopefully that made sense.
Thank you. That makes sense for me.
Okay.
I did make a notes, and then we can follow up with you to make sure our language is improved. This aspect of the powers and duties with the regulatory disciplinary actions that's noted does include rehabilitation in it, but I can see how it's written. It still is very choppy. So I believe it's actually from the medical board's processes and rules that was taken, the exact line. So I'll go back and make sure that it either is explained better, or we can look at maybe referencing other things, like you said.
So yeah, I definitely think that there is a solution there.
And maybe, I mean, the idea is, I don't know, I'm just sort of thinking of unintended consequences of certain, you know, language that's, or, you know, different kinds of languages and bills. Maybe the idea is, you know, there's almost like a no tolerance or a reduced tolerance policy that the legislature is interested in with prescribing psychologists. So if there is any violation, the only available remedies or remedial mechanisms available to the psychology board are, you know, these drastic actions against the prescribing part of the licensure. So, I mean, I don't know as a member of the psychology board what the legislature's, you know, thinking on this is going to be ultimately. But in terms of, you know, what Dr. Manson, your organization is interested in, you know, you might want to think about what sort of tools does the psychology board have to deal with any allegations and complaints that might come up in the future.
Thank you.
Ms. Galvin and then Ms. Pakkanen.
I have one additional question. Is the board bound by the recommendation of either the MD or the DO board, based on your understanding of the language?
Based on my understanding of the language, it would be a primary recommendation, and you all are able to make your decision based off of that. So it is not bound.
Thank you.
That is what the discussions have been related to the medical board in specific.
Ms. Packinen, you had your hand up.
Yes, thank you. So not surprisingly, I'm going to make some of this about the cost, the financial implications, the fiscal implications. But I think what my, you know, in the past, I have said, you know, that the board will need an increased appropriation in the form of we need to be able to write administrative rules. And then in my assessment, we will still need an expert that we can leverage to evaluate, you know, certain, whether certain requirements have been met for purposes of the eligibility for licensure, to make recommendations to the board, and also the agreement. So that doesn't concern me as much as probably my comments in the past have indicated, because what I've learned from Dr. Manson is that it's not as though we're going to be accepting applications tomorrow. So I believe this board has time to then, the statutes would be enacted, and then the sequence of events would be we go to the Governor's Regulatory Review Council with our proposed rules, because we have the statutory mandate now. So the rules need to happen, need to be prepared. And then we also have the statutory justification to go to the governor's office and to the legislature to say, we need the authority to spend, you know, what we are collecting in fees for these needs. So I know what I need to do. I'm clear on that, and I am not daunted by, you know, that time frame any longer. So I want to get that on the record. What I find interesting, and Dr. Manson, I think we're going to have this conversation with my counterparts of the MD and DO board. We're going to have to talk about the fees and, you know, a potential of a shared fee arrangement. I can't imagine, as much as we would like to keep all of the revenue from the fees, I can't imagine those boards are going to be, you know, particularly, and maybe they haven't thought about this, but if they bear the cost of doing the investigations and formulating the recommendations to this board, obviously there needs to be, you know, some mechanism for fees to, you know, to cover all of the board's efforts. I have some ideas for what that might look like. I'm convinced if the three of us come together with you, meaning the three EDs and you, that we can work out an arrangement that would be fair, you know, to all concerned. It has to be done in a specific way, though. It can't be sort of something that there's a very right way of doing this, and there's a terribly wrong way of doing this. And maybe more instances than my brain is capable of thinking of right now. So I really want to make sure we have this piece figured out, so that all three boards understand, you know, what they, what financial support they receive for the work that they need to do. So just a little issue to resolve. And then my last comment is that, Dr. Manson, you'll remember that I said, even though I just said we're not going to be licensing people tomorrow or receiving applications tomorrow, I did bring up the universal recognition piece. So, you know, what if a psychologist with prescribing authority that was granted in, you know, Illinois a few decades ago, or Idaho, or New Mexico, what if they apply for licensure here under universal recognition? This board has no authority to evaluate their education, their training, you know, any of those credentials. So that was a piece that has been, you know, sort of lingering in my mind, you know, in terms of how do we resolve this? But the way that this language reads to me, I think that it's a non-issue now, because first we license this person as a psychologist. So if someone from one of those states decides to move to Arizona for purposes of being a prescribing psychologist, they would apply, they would establish that they meet the qualifications of licensure under universal recognition, and now they're licensed as a psychologist. So then they are subject to all of the qualifications They have to demonstrate having met all the qualifications in this language. That is how I'm reading and construing this. So unless anyone disagrees with me, I don't think the universal recognition issue is an issue.
May I reply, Dr. Diner?
Sure, yes.
Yes, I agree. That is how it was written, is so that there can be first that initial application and licensure as a psychologist, and then a review to meet these qualifications. And in specific, as of right now, there is no automatic adoption of previous privilege to Arizona. Again, we're still working, and so who knows what will happen, but so far that has not been a discussion. And we have had very positive response from the American Psychological Association and their Division 55 on offering experts that are collaborative to work with, so far, all the states that they've done that with. And those times, what I know is that those have been pro bono, which is wonderful, but I still agree we need to go and do the financial ask and in that right way. So what I'll do is I'll make a meeting with you so we can plan out what that ask needs to look like and the timelines and how to do that. And then we can meet with additional boards after we do that related to it.
Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Diner. Going back to Ms. Galvin's point is, the Board of Psychologist Examiners restricted to accepting the recommendation from BOMAX, for instance, or the Osteopathic Board? And the answer was no, that we have some leeway within our structure to do something different. And maybe this is a question for Ms. Galvin. What are the legal ramifications if BOMAX says deny or restrict or forfeit a prescriptive license, a prescriptive authority, and we choose not to do that? I think that would be placing this board in a tremendous position of jeopardy. I don't know. Ms. Galvin, do you?
This is all very theoretical at this time, but if we received a recommendation from either one of the boards that this board, did not agree with, it's similar to receiving an opinion from an outside expert that we've contracted with that members of the board may not agree with. You run the risk of having a recommendation from a reputable source. We would obviously be free to receive our own consultation report from an outside expert. And then you do have the potential risk of competing professional views. It does say in the proposed language that this board shall receive and consider recommendations from the medical board or the osteopathic board. But it does go to your question that what if there is a disagreement?
Thank you. One more question, if I may, Mr. Diner. Dr. Manson, and this is hypothetical, and I ask you to put on your magic cap, thinking cap to respond. Where is this law going in the future? Where is the prescriptive authority going in the future? Is this a camel with the nose in the tent syndrome where what do you see happening? You're obviously familiar with other states who have established a prescriptive authority for psychologists. Have they upped the ante and become more independent as the years have gone, or what?
Yes, may I respond, Dr. Niner? Yes. So one great thing is in over 20 years of prescribing practices, there has not been a concern related to a board sanction for a prescribing psychologist. So hopefully we will continue that, as I knock on wood, related to that. Regarding where we are going with this, yes, most of the states have seen a transition. that have been licensed, that have had license privileges for years. And those transitions are things that you see already built in here that you could probably imagine. Things like being able to expand to have children or servicing individuals who might may be pregnant, et cetera. So they have had those additional, a lengthening of their privileges and their terms. In some states, they have restricted the use of prescribing things like Suboxone for opioid treatment. And recently there was an opening related to that. Of course, there obviously you can understand the reasons and the needs for that. There is not a larger change as far as the licensure regarding opening it up to other types of prescribing practices outside of this. So there is no thought process of general medicine as to get a full prescribing authority to prescribe all medications. It's cheaper, easier, and quicker to do a PA or an NP degree. So this is actually a significantly longer and much more costly process for a prescriber to do. As of right now, you have a year and a half for the PA to be have a prescription privilege as far as their schooling, and then an additional semester, so to incorporate 2 years max, to be able to have their prescribing and all of their internships completed. So this is not something that we are going for that. And if someone was interested in that, they would probably more likely just go in that way. And we actually have a number in the United States of prescribing psychologists that are actually medical doctors, DOs, naturopaths, and as well as PAs, NPs, et cetera. So I don't see us doing that. This is really focused on being able to have the highest level of education and training and expertise in psychopharmacology and clinical aspects of care for our populations. So only referencing the practice of psychology.
Thank you, Dr. Manson.
Any other questions?
Mr. Dinah?
Yes,
Dr. Sorry, I cannot use any of my features. So
No worries. Yeah, just call me out.
In the past, the board has written a letter. Sometimes it's just a letter. Sometimes it's a letter of support. And I'm wondering whether this is the right time or we need to wait for the final bill, but to give Ms. Pakkanen some direction as to the type of letter we would like to write on behalf of this bill.
And Mr. Chair, if I can speak to that, the board can make this in my mind, the board can make this decision as late as the December meeting.
Okay.
So we do have time, but thank you, Dr. Malott, for reminding the board that we need to take that step.
Any other questions for Dr. Manson? Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Dinar. More of a comment and observation. As initially proposed, I was against prescriptive authority for psychologists simply because I work primarily in psychiatric medical settings and followed the path of nurse practitioners and their prescriptive licensure and independent practice over the years. But the way this has been written and the proposals that I've heard today, I can certainly see myself being in support of this as it is, especially with Dr. Manson's input today. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart, and I appreciate that comment. I also want to thank Dr. Manson for being here and, you know, all the hard work and hours of meetings and, back to the drawing board discussions that you must have gone through to get to this point. And also want to thank our staff for being active participants and stakeholders in this whole process. I know that's a toe outside the job description, so I do appreciate the staff's efforts on that behalf. I don't think at this point we need a motion, but Ms. Pakkanen or Ms. Galvin, if you have other thoughts about that.
Mr. Chair, I just see this potentially coming back, depending on what we're able to accomplish between now and November 3rd. This could be on your November 3rd agenda, but at the absolute latest, the December, whatever it is, agenda, I haven't looked that far into the future. So, but Dr. Manson and I will stay in close contact. I think we know what we need to be doing in the interim.
Thank you. I do appreciate all the effort that has gone into this. So no motion being needed for this. Let's move on to other items. Dr. Manson, again, thank you for being here. So Ms. Pakkanen, what would you recommend we take up next?
I do believe, so we've been working behind the scenes to identify, you know, what items we feel that, you know, acknowledging there's an inconvenience factor, but there's also some items that, you know, we really do want to sort of address, you know, in terms of a hierarchy or triaging them, if you will. So we are going to go to 10 and then 11. The guest speakers for 9 can join us at 11:30. If Dr. Malott is willing to stay with us from 11:30 to 12, that may be the end of our meeting.
Okay, I should be fine. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So let's go to number 10. And I know it's around the time when people are looking for a break, but in the interest of going till noon, if everybody's willing, let's sort of power through some of these items. I see nodding heads, yes, so I'll take that as a yes. Item number 10 is a discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding the Committee of Behavior Analysts' recommendation to offer a consent agreement for decree of censure, probation, and continuing education to Dana Johnson, MS, for complaint number 23-49, and additional recommendation to open a complaint against Ms. Johnson for future investigation regarding unlicensed practice concerns. The board may vote to go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS section 38-431.03, subsection A2, to receive confidential records, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is confidential by state or federal law, and or 38-431.03, subsection A3, to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. So by way of clarification, we really have two matters here to address. So I was hoping to take one matter at a time. The recommendation for resolution of case number 23-49 is one, and then the matter of whether to open a separate complaint concerning the more recently discovered allegations of unlicensed practice would be a second item. So Dr. Stanhoff, since you're the lead, would you please provide a summary of the case to the board?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Downer. So the board received a complaint in April of 2023 alleging that upon returning from a two-week vacation, Ms. Johnson had submitted a resignation. The committee did find also that she secured a behavior analyst position with another company prior to submitting her resignation to her then employer, Centria. She acknowledged that she did start employment prior to that, and while she was scheduled on leave with Centria, the committee did find that the allegations were in fact correct. And Ms. Johnson and also proposed that a consent agreement be signed. Ms. Johnson did sign the consent agreement. The consent agreement included a decree of censure and also that probation was in order and also continuing education credits. Ms. Johnson did agree to this consent agreement and had signed it as of September 8th of 2023. That's my review. If you would like further information or have questions for me, feel free.
Thank you, Dr. Stanhoff. At this point, are there any questions for Dr. Stanhoff?
So at this point, do we, if we are in agreement, do we just make a motion to approve the consent agreement? Is that the right step, Ms. Galvin? Yeah, I see you nodding.
That's correct.
Yeah, that's the path you want to take. But let's first see if LL, the complainant, is present. And if so, now would be the time for the complainant to make a statement. Hearing none, let's see if Ms. Johnson or Ms. Johnson's attorney is present, and if they are.
Yes, good morning, members of the board. Mandy Carvis of Wicker Smith appearing with and on behalf of Dr. Johnson, who's also present. She'd be happy to address any questions that any members of the board has. We have signed the consent agreement, and we believe that that's an appropriate resolution of this matter. Ms. Johnson understands that she could have handled her resignation from this company in a better and a more professional manner. As she explained to the committee, she was concerned that she was actually in the process of being terminated, so she was trying to be proactive, but she understands that she should have handled that in a different way. She has already taken some continuing education voluntarily and will abide by all the other terms of the consent agreement if this board were to approve it. She's happy to answer any questions that anyone may have of her.
Thank you, Ms. Carvis, and thank you, Ms. Johnson, for being here. At this point, do any of the board members have questions for Ms. Johnson or her attorney, Ms. Carvis? Hearing none, is there a discussion item, deliberation, or a motion?
Mr. Diner, I'd like to make a motion that that we accept the consent agreement.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed, recused, abstaining? The motion carries. I'm sorry, Ms. Galvin, I thought you were on the verge of saying something.
I was. We do need a roll call because it does call for discipline.
Okay. Let's do a roll call, Ms. Poe. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Dr. Medina?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you. So that concludes our agenda item number 10. Ms. Pakkanen, what should be the next one?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I apologize for interrupting. We would need for the board to review the second part of the recommendation for Ms. Johnson's case relative to the complaint opening for the unlicensed practice issue.
That's right. I was just testing everybody.
memory.
Let's go to the second part of item number 10, which relates to the additional recommendation to open a complaint. And Dr. Stenhoff, you're doing so well. So
will you please Thank you, Mr. Chair. The second part of that item was related to practicing without a license. So during the review of the case, the CBA found that Ms. Johnson was practicing between November of 2022 to January of 2023 upon the receipt of her licensure. And so due to that, there was a discussion about that and to consider whether decide whether we need to open a complaint regarding that issue. And so I'm going to open that up to the committee, but for further discussion, if there are any.
Are there any questions for Dr. Stenhoff at this time?
Yes, I have a question. Dr. Stenhoff, so Ms. Johnson's license had expired on which date?
No, it had not expired. She was applying for licensure date. Yeah.
Okay.
So, to answer your question, no, it was not a matter of an expired license and not renewing. It was a matter of initial licensure.
So do you mind maybe reviewing the dates for us. So when the complaint, the first complaint was open, the board met. I'm a little confused, and it could be because I jumped on the call, you know, so do you mind reviewing?
No. So her initial in, Dr. Malat, if I'm not answering your question specifically, let me know. But her license was given on January 13th. However, in April, the board received a complaint, or board staff received a complaint from Ms. Johnson's supervisor regarding the departure or the resignation from the company. And failing to ensure that that the clients were transitioned properly. At that point, the committee recommended a consent agreement, which Ms. Johnson signed. However, during that investigation of the complaint, it also came to light that Ms. Johnson was practicing between November of 2022 and 2023, or excuse me, November 2022 to January of 2023 without a license. And so that's where we stand at this time.
And was that practice independent or under supervision?
It was under it was not under supervision. It was this is the same issue that we've had with the company that she was employed with prior, where there's this idea of mid-level supervision, but it's not appropriate supervision by a licensed behavior analyst. And that was the case in regard to Ms. Johnson's employment with Century.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Steinhoff and Dr. Malat. I see Ms. Karvis is here, and if you would like to speak to this issue, now would be the time.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. And again, Ms. Johnson is present and happy to answer any questions anyone has regarding the timeline of events as well. It would be our request that this board not open another complaint. This was a timing issue and some confusion with respect to Ms. Johnson and her then employer, which, as I understand it from the committee meeting and from Dr. Stenhoff's comments, there have been some other issues that this board has addressed with that employer. Ms. Johnson is now under a consent agreement with the board. She's going to have a period of probation, and she's going to have continuing education. Another action on her license, as I understand it, would continue to potentially cause issues with her ability to renew her BCBA licensure. This board will have oversight of her now through the duration of her probation. And we do not believe that the opening of another complaint to address this issue is necessary. She's obviously aware of what needs to happen with respect to her licensure. That issue was resolved. But if Ms. Johnson, Ms. Johnson is here and she's happy to answer any questions the board may have about how that issue occurred and the timing. She may be in a better position to speak to that if someone has a specific question, but our request would be not to open another complaint with respect to that issue.
Are there any questions for Ms. Johnson or Ms. Karvis at this point? I see Dr. Katrina's hand up and then Dr. Stenhoff.
Yes, I would like if Ms. Johnson would explain how that occurs at unlicensed period. I would be interested in hearing that. Thank you.
Yeah, so I was working at Centria, and I'm living in Utah. I practice in Utah, or did. And so I had a Utah license, and I informed my supervisor, BCBA, that I did not have a license in Arizona. And she informed me that I would be practicing under her license and that it would be okay. And with that, I thought that I would be practicing under her license, so that even though I didn't have an Arizona license at the time, that I was being supervised under someone who did have an Arizona license.
How was the billing done?
All what I was told by my company at the time was that I would fill out the regular supervision forms. And then I met with my supervising BCBA once a week and discussed cases and clients.
So did they bill under your supervisor's name or your name?
I was told to sign it and to use my information. I don't know if they did additional signing and information under my supervising BCBA. I do not know.
Yeah, and just to clarify, Dr. Caterino, Ms. Johnson was not in charge of the billing. Centria handled that. She just filled out the forms as she was indicated and when she did evaluations and things, and they handled the billing. So I'm not sure that she's in the position to say specifically how they billed it.
And can that be, those records be subpoenaed or not?
Well, we are trying to ascertain whether to open a complaint. Once we open a complaint, I would assume we would have mechanisms to obtain additional information.
I was thinking we might need them to open the complaint the other way around. Okay.
You know, I just want to make a comment. I don't know whether we've moved into deliberations or not. As Ms. Carlos has indicated as our counsel, you know, Ms. Johnson is under our she's under a consent agreement. The consent agreement is, you know, pretty detailed. It includes a degree of censure. It includes probation. It includes continuing it. So we are monitoring and supervising. If this came to the board back in November that she was practicing without a license, our action at that time, since she wasn't licensed, would have been to cease and desist. There would have been no action or, you know, we couldn't have done a consent agreement because she technically wasn't under our board. So we would have sent her a letter to cease and desist, and that would have been the end of the matter unless she continued to practice. Now we're going back hindsight, and I do not believe we need to open a complaint. She's already under our supervision and under probation and all of the different aspects. So, you know, I think she's heard, you know, I mean, and we could maybe add on to that consent agreement about maybe additional hours, but I don't think we need to do that because of all of the terms that she's under right now. So that is my opinion. And so I just wanted to state that.
Thank you, Dr. Mulat. Dr. Stanhoff. You're muted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Mulat, I agree with you. One of the concerns as I'm reviewing the consent agreement, the focus of it had to do more with the incident that occurred earlier regarding the transition. I would like, I would like confidence that there's an understanding of how to practice within the state of Arizona, what the requirements are in regard to being licensed. And I know this in Ms. Johnson, in regard to that as well, there, you know, we're responsible to understand, just like our ethics code of the BACB, we're also required to understand state statute and rule for our practice as well. I want, and maybe this event takes care of that, but the consent agreement says nothing about that piece. Well, we have several hours in there, and I'm not inclined to say we need to add more hours on. I just want the assurance, one, that obviously this isn't going to happen again if there is a lapse in it. The other piece of it is, you as a supervisor, as a BCBA and a licensed BCBA in the state, you will be charged to oversee other, you know, other BCBAs as they're developing and so on. It falls on the BCBA to understand the rules and regulations of the state and also our ethics code. And regardless of, the company, with whom you have been employed, you know, suggests otherwise, we also need to make sure that we're operating in that regard too. You know, and I appreciate you coming on here to address this, but I also, you know, I want the assurance or, and I'm not sure how that we would do that, that this won't happen again, nor will it happen again with your supervisees, who you would be working with in the future. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff, Dr. Medina, and then Ms. Gavin.
Thank you, Mr. Diner. I agree with Dr. Malad's points about this case, because had this been brought up, when this person wasn't licensed, it would have been a cease and desist, and that would have been the end of it. I think it sounds like there was really bad information provided to her. But I guess this is more of a question in general. What can be done in regards to this agency? Because I don't think it's the first time that we hear about issues with people employed in the agency, unless I'm mistaken. But I believe I've heard.
Dr. Medini, yes, your memory is correct.
Well, yay. Thank you for once. But this is very concerning, and it's not the first. It's probably not the second, nor the third. And I don't know, maybe it is for Ms. Gavin or someone. I mean, I am concerned that they continue to hire people and practice in our state and take our funds.
Yeah, I think Dr. Medina, I've heard this a few times about, you know, the need for a part of like the reason these board meetings and committee meetings are valuable to those who attend is that educational aspect of it. And, you know, we I think create awareness and we educate the public to some extent when we have cases like this, where, you know, we can take that opportunity to then explain how, you know, Arizona statutes work and how our obligations as licensed professionals, you know, change when we cross state lines and so forth. So I do appreciate that Ms. Johnson has taken that seriously. And, you know, I don't see any need to open a complaint. But again, I want to give a chance to everybody to ask questions if there are any further questions. But let's go to Ms. Galvin.
Would the board care to receive legal advice in executive session?
Yes, let's do that. Let's. I'll make a motion to go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
Is a motion and a second? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Let's go into executive session.
You're muted, Mr. Diner.
Oh, thank you. You know, it had to happen at least once. I was saying it's 11:31 and we're back in open session. Board members, do you have any discussion items at this point?
Mr. Diner or Mr. Chair?
Yes, Dr. Stan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Dr. Medina politely had her hand up.
Oh, no, I was just going to make a comment. Is Dr. Malott back here? Because
I'm here.
Okay, there you are. Sorry.
I just cannot, for some reason, it says I'm on webcam and I don't know where that is. So.
That's okay. I just wanted to make sure we could, you know, we were all here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Stenhoff.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, a couple of things, you know, as I was looking through the file a little bit more, that are concerning. One is, you know, state licensure has been around for several years now across the United States, and it's been a hot topic among behavior analysts, and the BACB's reviewed it. Ms. Johnson is not a stranger to licensure. She was licensed in the state of Utah in October of 2020, so almost two years before practicing without a license in the state of Arizona. So just a couple of points of concern. The other is, as I pointed out earlier, we're required to understand the state laws and requirements in the state in which we practice, as well. And it's our job to know that, part of it is we're not dealing with a new BCBA. She's been a BCBA since 2019. And so there's that aspect of the level of professionalism. So I'm going to stop my comments at that point, but I just wanted to note that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? So I'll mention something. I think there is something to be said about, how the organization that Ms. Johnson works for is conducting its activities. And as Dr. Stenhoff said, and we all are aware, there's specific licensure requirements. And yes, for behavior analysts, they are perhaps more complicated than for psychologists, but, it's our duty as licensed professionals to know and understand the implications of all of the requirements, licensing requirements that are out there. So I would want to know more about the wrong advice that Ms. Johnson received from her supervisor behavior analyst, which led to all of this, led to this potential unlicensed practice. I would want to know more about the billing practices of the employer, because that would give us some information. But I think ultimately, whatever the result, we aren't prejudging anything. We are just sort of evaluating whether to open a complaint. And once a complaint is opened, I think at that point, the board has the tools necessary to do those investigations, to find out more about the employer, to find out more about the supervisor behavior analyst, to find out more about, the nature and extent of Ms. Johnson's unlicensed practice, if there is any. So I think all of that counsels in favor of at least opening a complaint, doing that investigation. And the other part of that is our investigatory powers don't kick in until we have an open complaint. So, there isn't an option for us to sort of do some soft investigation before opening a complaint. So I guess, given that limitation on what the board can do in this instance, I think the indicated course of action would be to open a complaint, have that investigation. It may lead to, various different outcomes. It isn't a given that would lead to any sort of action against Ms. Johnson. But that's what I have in mind. Any other discussion? Dr. Stewart and then Dr. Caterino.
I would like to make a motion, if I may, after Dr. Caterino.
That was what I was going to ask, if it was a motion. Yes.
Okay, Dr. Stewart, you go first.
Thank you, Chair. I move that we open a complaint on licensed practice by Dana Johnson.
A second.
There is a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Recused? Abstaining? Hearing none, the motion carries. Ms. Carvis and Ms. Johnson, thank you for being here. I'm sure board staff will have additional communications with you. All right, Ms. Pekkanen, what would you recommend we take up next?
Excellent. Thank you so much. We appreciate the opportunity to appear and address the board this morning.
Yes, Mr. Chair, let's do number 11.
All right. Number 11 is discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding the Committee of Behavior Analysts' recommendation to offer a consent agreement to Zachary Reinecke, Ahmed. I hope I'm saying your last name correctly, for complaint number 23-48, and additional recommendation that Mr. Reinecke's employer, Team 4 Kids Pediatric Therapy, be referred to ACCESS, Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, or Department of Health Services, or any other applicable agency as determined by staff. Ms. Michelson, I think Dr. Stenhoff is recused from this matter, so Ms. Michelson, would you provide the board with a summary? And before actually you do that, that doesn't run into our quorum problems, does it?
It does.
Yes, it does. And I don't know if Dr. Stenhoff is recused from both the matter involving Mr. Reinecke or the second part of the issue about whether a referral would be made for the entity. Dr. Stenhoff, did you want to clarify?
Yeah, I'm regarding the consent agreement. I'm okay. I'm not prepared to discuss the overview. So if Ms. Michelson, you're able to do that, that'd be great. But as far as the second part, I would say that I should be recused from that piece of it.
So then, just the first part is okay, but not the second part.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. Then in that case, Ms. Michelson, back to you. Would you please provide a summary of the matter to us?
Yes, Mr. Chair. And I'll just be summarizing for the first part for the proposed consent agreement, correct? Okay. In April, the board received a complaint against Mr. Reinecke, who was issued his behavior analyst license by the board back in 2019. At the time this complaint was received, Mr. Reinecke was working at the agency as their operations director. The complaint was filed by a registered behavior technician who worked at this agency. She alleged that Mr. Reinecke failed to provide appropriate supervision and support to her in her role as a RBT for a minor client whose case was particularly complex. The RBT also alleged that Mr. Reinecke failed to adequately manage the overall behavior analytic care plan for this client. The complaint was reviewed by the CBA on two dates, in July and on August 25th, most recently. The CBA did find multiple violations of unprofessional conduct and expressed significant concern relative to Mr. Reinecke's conduct in this case. After deliberation, the CBA recommended that Mr. Reinecke enter into a consent agreement with the following terms, which I will outline. Probation for a minimum of 12 months. While on probation, he will work with a pre-approved practice monitor, a practice restriction in that while on probation, he shall not complete any assessments independently and shall be conducted by another LBA or observed and co-signed by another LBA at the agency. Additionally, the practice restriction is that he shall not provide supervision to any student or trainee for licensure or certification purposes. Additionally, he would be required to complete 15 hours of pre-approved continuing education, which cannot be used for future license renewals. And then the agreement indicates upon the passage of 12 months and upon the practice monitor's recommendation, he can petition the board at that time to be released from probation and monitoring. Board staff subsequently draft a proposed consent agreement based on these terms cited by the CA and was sent to Mr. Reinecke and his attorney for consideration. Recently, we did receive the signed agreement, which is before the board today for review and possible approval as a final disposition for this complaint.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson, for that summary. Let's see if complainant AK is present. If you are, you can unmute yourself and make a brief statement of up to 3 minutes at this time. seeing that a complainant is not present, let's go to Ms. Reinecke, or excuse me, Mr. Reinecke. I believe your attorney is Ms. Stark. Thank you both for being here. You may wish to make a statement at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and we'll be very brief. As Ms. Michelson indicated, Mr. Reinecke has signed the proposed consent agreement that was offered by the committee, so we would just ask that the board accept that as a resolution of this matter. And Mr. Reinecke is available for any questions any of the board members may have at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stark. Board members, do you have any questions for Mr. Reinecke or Ms. Stark? Seeing none, is there a motion? Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. I move that we accept the consent agreement.
Second.
There's a motion and the second, I believe it's Dr. Medina. All in favor, please say aye.
Do you need a roll call?
Roll call. Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Let's do a roll call, Ms. Pope.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Dinar?
Yes.
Dr. Catarino?
Yes.
Dr. Medina?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Poe. And then the second half, we are going to re-agendize for a future meeting. So at this time, I think we have only a few minutes for with Dr. Malott being able to attend the meeting. So Ms. Pakkanen, what should we go to next?
Let's do number seven. There is a deadline associated with number seven of November 1. So hence why I'm hoping we can move through this. And I'll be very fast so that our guests can be, have the greatest length of time possible to provide us with an update. On September 1, the board reviewed the Sunrise application, the draft that is being prepared on behalf of the State Association of Behavior Analysts. The board gave feedback, which I think was very well received. And so that feedback has been assimilated into version 2.0 that you are reviewing, and that our guests with Goodman and Associates, that they are trying to submit or intend to submit November 1. And then in addition to that, a preliminary draft proposed bill is also before you for review. And the purpose of this time together is to get the board's input into that draft. I have a couple of comments very briefly to make to it, if you'll indulge me when we get to that time. And with that, I'd like to give the floor to Ms. Patron. I see her.
Ms. Patron, thank you for being here. Welcome once again. Please get us started.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Mr. Chairman. And thank you to the board for having us on the agenda again today. And Stuart Goodman is also with me today to help us with this. I think Ms. Pakkanen did a great job of summarizing where we're at. We want to first start out by thanking the board for your comments and feedback at the last month's meeting. Really appreciated the discussion and the feedback that we received. The draft that you have before you on the Sunrise application is our attempt to address the feedback that we received. And so, Mr. Chairman, I think with that, we'd be happy to enter into a discussion on thoughts about, the changes that we made, and if there's any further comments or changes that the board would like us to consider. As Ms. Pakkanen described, we do need to submit this to the legislature by November 1st. So we appreciate getting this time on your agenda today. I know it's packed in quorum issues. So thank you for doing that for us so that we could get that feedback ahead of our November 1st deadline.
Thank you. And welcome, Mr. Goodman, as well. Welcome again, I should say. Board members, do you have any questions, concerns, comments? Dr. Catarino.
It's now an appropriate time to have any thoughts by Dr. DiBacco or not, because he did have some concerns, I believe, on this.
Mr. Chair, I think that probably Dr. DeBacco and I can have a conversation, and you know, I can sort of you know, chink in some information that I think he will appreciate having as we move forward. And just by way of reminder, I had offered for a future board meeting to sort of outline in some fashion a roadmap that I see with respect to, you know, how we allocate, identify and allocate resources to adequately support both boards. So I've given this a lot of thought, and I really want this to be fully documented and appreciated by this board and any stakeholder. So I know what I know what I need to do, and I know what I need to document.
The thoughts about the finances gave me something to think about. So thank you.
Sure.
Any questions for Ms. Petrone or Mr. Goodman? Ms. Pakkinen.
Yes, it's a foregone conclusion. I will have some. So first of all, I want to thank the group for indulging my request, which was to change. I had an opportunity to see this proposed language before the board did. The proposed date for the move out, if we want to call it that, was originally January 1 of 2025. I asked for June 30th to separate it at the conclusion of a fiscal year, just for you know, purposes of it's less messy without going into painful description beyond that. But I really appreciate that Aziaba agreed to that. So the separating, you know, all of the reporting and the financial transactions and all of that behind the scenes work, that accommodation is so valuable, and I'm extremely grateful for it. So one question I did have, Ms. Petrone, you'll remember this. I think Aziaba, they were going to look at what would be the language in the relocation to 32401 subsection 2B, the definition of behavior analysis, that there was some thought to retention or not of language that describes what behavior analysis isn't. That has, you know, been a subject of some discussions by, I know, the profession and by the Committee on Behavior Analysts, that it's an oddity describing what a profession is not. So I see that language is intact, at least in this draft. So I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Packin, happy to address that. So yeah, there have been conversations within Aziaba and I think the community about that language. I think it you said it well, it is an oddity the way that it is written. And discussions with us, we have chosen to leave that language in there now, quite frankly, for political reasons. Our bill at this moment is what we would call a technical administrative bill. And that change could be seen as a change in scope of practice. And that would then add to the work and the conversations that need to happen. I do think, and I know Jessica Belokas is on, and I neglected to mention that she was on for Aziaba today. I do think Aziaba will continue those discussions. If we were to have some agreement amongst our communities of other providers that we work with, that that's not an issue, then maybe we would bring this back to include. But at this time, because it would be seen as a scope of practice issue, we've decided to leave it out.
Thank you. I understand that perfectly well. From a public protection or regulatory perspective, I don't know that the committee has any history with looking at that language. Dr. Stenhoff, I don't know if you've ever seen that language sort of be evaluated or reviewed in the course of any history that we've had for what that is worth. I don't know that that's sort of been that language just sort of exists there. And I don't think it's been reviewed or applied in any capacity for what that is worth. So then my only other comment is that, which I should have said this earlier, by shifting, you know, the time frame by even 6 months, what I am projecting very conservatively is that the fund will grow, the BA fund will grow to over $1 million by that point in time. So that's a very healthy fund balance to work with as we navigate these issues. You know, we're already acknowledging the need to augment the existing staff under the current arrangement, under the current structure. We know we can't sustain our efforts to protect the public with the 4.5 individuals that we have and the small fraction that is dedicated to behavior analysts. So even with those additions and then the very few instances where the new board would take on costs that couldn't be shared with psychology board, I am not at all worried about this from a fiscal perspective. So so that will be part of my analysis as well. Just some acknowledgement that over time, you know, the fund is only going to grow and, you know, provide plentiful resources and support for, you know, where this new board, what challenges they would take on.
So one comment and one question I have. The comment is, I think in the previous board meeting, there was Dr. Davey and a few others expressed concerns with sort of like how the statistical analysis was expressed in the Sunrise application. And I see that there have been several changes that you submitted in Redline. So I wanted to commend you for taking those comments and, you know, making those changes. But for purposes of our board members and board staff, wanted to draw your attention to it because that was something that was discussed previously. And I just wanted to make sure that the new proposed language I don't have any additional concerns with that, but just because those concerns were expressed, I just want to make sure that if there are any further concerns with that, now would be the time to bring them to Ms. Patron, Mr. Goodman, and Ms. Belokas's attention. The question I have in regard to, again, funding, maybe Ms. Pakkanen already has some thoughts on this, but I would like your thoughts on sort of, because I mean, many times the psychology board, and in the future we'll continue to do this, you know, we reevaluate performance and do salary increases. And, you know, so how does the full-time employment FTEs get distributed between this board and the new board? I mean, I am usually on the side of, you know, increasing compensation to our board staff who spend many, many hours and, you know, have just give excellent service to the psychology board, and which, you know, once the board becomes two boards, you know, if we decide to give, I'm just throwing out numbers, but like a 10% increase, like what happens? Like how much of that increase is it? Is it like 10% of 50%? Or is it 10% of 100%? And then if the behavior analyst board has other thoughts, then how does that play out?
Oh, I can take that if I may. There is a model for that with the Arizona Medical Board and the physician assistant, the PA board. Again, same concept here. They share a common staff and all of the financial aspects of that. I don't have the specific answer of how they do that in percentages, but there is a model that they utilize that have allowed them to cohabitate peacefully and productively. And so I think we can go back and certainly get more details on how that works. My recollection is they have a joint committee of members of both boards, and they kind of figure it out administratively. That's my recollection. But again, it's a model that works, because we're using it in other areas. Not quite the answer you're looking for, but hopefully one that has an optimistic tone to it.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, it's, yeah, we aren't sort of trying to reinvent something. If there is a model out there, of course, I mean, somebody has figured it out. So I'm glad to hear that. Dr. Mulat and then Dr. Katerina.
So my question is, just kind of, I'm thinking logistically, we still have the Board of Psychologist Examiners. So that would still be the name of the board. With that, and then under that, you have behavior analysts operating separately and psychologists operating separately. And I don't know, maybe the medical board is a good example of that, where you have PAs who are licensed, you know. I'm just trying to maybe asking Brandy and Stuart. I'm just wondering with the naming convention. I appreciate all the language changes that were made. I think some language was taken out, but I don't see a strikeout because I've looked at it and I don't see any of some of the comments that were there before. I see the additions and I see some strikeouts, but I couldn't find some of the things that I saw from before under the strikeout, but it's not there either. So I'm okay with that. So I'm just wondering what that naming convention, and typically when you have two entities, you know, and you have one, like the executive director is the person I'm thinking of the most, because I think you may have different staff doing licensing and, you know, the complaints investigations. But then you have the ED that's really managing both boards. And then who is the boss for the ED? You know, is it the psych board or is it the behavior analyst or does one have 51%? So just those are just some logistical questions that probably is not in the language, but those are my thoughts, comments, questions.
Dr. Mulata, if I may, these are what we're proposing is two separate autonomous independent boards, right? The psychology board that actually existed before 2008, right? Before you brought in behavior analysts, not you, but the legislature brought them in. You have an independent behavior analyst board sharing a common staff. But the fact of the matter is they are two separate boards functioning on the licensing of their own respective professions. With regard to the executive director, my view, essentially, again, using the medical board and the PA board as the example, is you have one individual, one staff, wearing two separate hats, dealing with two separate professions. My recollection is there is a committee comprised of both PAs and MDs that function with those sort of administrative issues. It really comes up most notably when there is a changing of staff, particularly the executive director. They have to work together to agree on who is the director's successor. That's really where it comes in. And again, there is a model already developed to handle those issues. But Dr. Mulata, there really are two separate boards sharing one staff.
And if I may, Dr. Mulata, Mr. Chairman, so in the draft bill language that was also provided to Dr. Mulata, so you'll see that now you have a state board of behavior analysts that has been created. That is the new name for the behavior analyst board with no changes to the psychology board. So you'll see that naming convention throughout as the behavior analyst committee officially is turned into that board and separated. And to Stuart's point, I just wanted to let the board know as well, the medical board and the PA board are really great examples of how this works. But so you're aware, there's two other sets of boards in the state of Arizona that also share staff. So I know that Ms. Packinen has, she's already thought about this a lot, I know, but also has two other sets of boards. So you have six boards that are doing this to work with that have figured out how to do this as well. And so I think there's some really great best practices that have probably already been created here in Arizona to make this work well from a staffing perspective. Thank you.
So before we go to Dr. Carino, just follow up on Dr. Mulata's question. So is there a change in composition to the psychologist examiner's board? Because we have behavior analysts currently, and how does that work?
Correct, Mr. Chairman. So yes, the behavior analysts are taken off of the psychology board. But there are no changes to the psychologist or your public members. It's just the removal of the behavior analyst, and they're essentially placed onto the behavior analyst board.
So we go from 10 to 8, or is there still 10?
I need to look real fast. I can't remember. I think
yeah, 10 to 8.
Behavior analyst now?
Two.
Yeah, there are two.
Yeah, so those two are taken off. Correct.
So is the language going to change that in the statutes?
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Millett, yes. So what you see, and let me find it for you, there is a section that takes those members off in the psychology statutes.
Can you refer the page number, please?
Yes, ma'am. Give me just a minute.
Mr. Chairman, while Brett is looking that up, the way I would describe it is we are essentially reestablishing the psychology board back to its original form prior to 2008, when the budget included behavior analysts within the board, and the subsequent changes over three or four years following that for implementation. That's an oversimplified way.
You were nine then, Stuart, not eight. Right.
Fair enough. But whatever, I said, big, if I may, Mr. Chairman, Dr. Millett, big picture, it's simply returning the board back to largely its original mission and composition, by and large.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, and Dr. Millett, so on the draft legislation that was provided to you all, page 28, we're looking at section 18 of the bill, which is currently 32-2062 in ARS. And you'll see on line 20, State Board of Psychologist Examiners is established consisting of, it strikes 10 and has 8. And then the conforming changes you'll see below to remove the behavior analyst in the lines below, lines 31 and 32.
I appreciate that clarification. So to Dr. Millett's point, if the board was 9 members before, before 2008, is there any appetite or interest in restoring the 9-member board as opposed to 8 members? Or is that even a politically palatable question? I don't know.
Mr. Chairman Stewart, we haven't thought about that yet. So I don't know that I have a direct answer for you. We would definitely consider that. And I think want to consider it from the Psychology Association perspective as well. We've been in communications with them.
But my recollection is, we added a PA, a behavior analyst. And I think we converted one other that was something else into a behavior analyst. Yeah, I thought something like that. We'd have to go back and look at that. I could make a political argument for it, that it's just full restoration.
So the way the composition was, we had three practitioner psychologists, and two academic psychologists, and the sixth position was kind of open for psychology. Yeah, so that's kind of what we did. So we took the open position and added one more.
And then the other question is, there's sort of like the idea of putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. And the composition has changed in the interim. I mean, there's 3 public members, and the legislature decided that, having public members increases the quality of decision making, whatever the legislature decided, right? So whatever that 9-member composition looks like there, or even 8-member composition looks like, I think that might be a point of contention at the legislature, because in the intervening years, there has been, a change in the sort of, let's say, percentage or the amount of public members on professional licensing boards, and that might affect the calculus as to, how the individual seats on the board are defined. I just wanted to put it out there. I'm not stating a particular position.
Mr. Chairman, to your point, I think making this as less complicated as possible, I think would benefit all interests, is a very different legislature than it was just a couple of years ago, let alone back in 2008. And I think less complicated would be, again, advantageous.
Dr. Caterina?
Yes, for Ms. Patron and Mr. Goodman, what would be the reason not to establish a completely independent board with its own staff and without any overlap? Why was that idea not brought forward?
Mr. Chairman, the reason is just the politics of eras of this legislature, even of this governor, not wanting to expand the footprint of government. Creating a brand new separate board with separate staff would be politically unattainable. There is the narrative about common staff just simply changing the committee and moving away from board ratification. That is a simpler political narrative. A separate board, separate staff, I think would just run afoul of the governor as well as the Republican-controlled legislature.
Well, but there's when this came up, was it the previous governor or this governor when it first was brought up? Because they are two different persuasions, yeah. Really.
Mr. Chairman, I think certainly it has been the view of the last several governors, including the Hobbs administration, does have an aversion to expanding government. That is almost a universal executive conversation. Some are certainly more adamant than others, but I think we're seeing even within Governor Hobbs a similar tone about the size of government.
And if I can add, there has also been the last few boards that have had changes made to them. This has been the way that they have been formulated. So those other boards I mentioned, you have the Occupational Therapy Board and the Board of Athletic Trainers that were put together. You also have the Acupuncture Board and the Board of Homeopathic and Natural and Integrated Medicine. When changes were made to those boards, this was the model that was passed and created, quite frankly, in just the last several years that those have happened. So that also has been sort of where things have headed just generally.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Stewart and then Dr. Stenhoff.
Thank you, Chair. I think we also need to be mindful, and Heidi is certainly aware of this, as well as Dr. Caterino and Dr. Medina, through our meetings with the ASPPB, that APA is pushing for master's level psychologist licensure nationally. And so this board would be the board that would have then behavior analysts at a master's level and master's degree in psychology practitioners as well. So I think not a question, but just to remain cognizant that this is apparently in the works and is pretty likely to come about.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm asking a question about the numbers. So I know in the proposed changes that you're going to be moving, or that you're proposing that we move to 8 board members on the psychologist side, and then 7 on the behavior analyst side, and not a game of competition, but Ms. Pakanon has conveyed the accelerated applications and licensure of behavior analysts. I'm just curious the discrepancy between the two board numbers. I don't know historically how that's determined, but question is why.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Stenhoff, so in looking at other board compositions, it's all over the map. So we didn't have any sort of guiding principle or any average, if you will, to take a look at on this. So for simplicity's sake, the only reason you have a 7-member behavior analyst board is because we took the 5 members of the committee and essentially made them the board. And then there is a requirement that public members, to the chairman's comments earlier, need to be present. So we added 2 public members. Quite honestly, it just, you know, chose kind of at random because we had nothing right to go off of from a standard or maybe a best practice or an average that the state had. And then again, the numbers from the psychology board were just simply, we left the psychology board alone other than taking off behavior analysts. So that's where you get your numbers.
Okay. So it's not a decision of volume or case review volume. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Ms. Pakkanen and then Dr. Mulott.
Yeah, just a quick comment, and this relates back to Dr. Caterino's question. So as it stands right now, the FTE assignment, which represents the licensing specialist and the portions of time that 3 other employees dedicate to behavior analysts, that FTE count is only 1.8. Assuming we get 1 FTE for investigations, or potentially, you know, we've acknowledged that maybe we won't be so fortunate. We'll get maybe a 0.5 FTE. It's very, very difficult to justify sort of, you know, creating an entirely separate administrative structure when your FTE count is so tiny. So I think I also want to, again, I guess, reiterate a bit what staff already has been experiencing. We treat the Committee on Behavior Analysts as though it's a board. They're every bit as demanding, sorry, Dr. Stenhoff, as a board, but deservedly so, right? I mean, they need applications prepared. They need investigations prepared. We have to do all the notices, all the minutes, all the things. So in terms of a labor shift, it's really not a whole lot. To be honest, I'll take on most of that from a, you know, reporting perspective. Even that being said, when reports are due, I am pulling data from the psychology side. I'm pulling data from the behavior analyst side. So I don't even think my reporting duties are going to be all that more elevated. And if anything, we're going to save some time from shuttling information back and forth from committee to board, board to committee, and so forth. There are some instances of that on, you know, today's agenda where that's pretty time consuming. So is the net effect going to be, you know, equal? I don't know, but it's going to be quite close. And so, you know, staff, we've had a lot of conversations about this, and we see elimination of duplicity, and we see some great efficiency potential as well.
Is that 1.8 this year or 3 years, or is that this year?
It's been at 1.8 since July of 2021.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Mulott?
Thank you. Given my experience on the board back in 2009, I think it's really, really important that the structure that is being recommended is the structure, you know, that I would strongly support. Being a sole board out there is very risky, and you don't know where you're going to be placed in the future. We saw what happened. Stuart and Brandy were the 3 people who were there at that, and, you know, of course, members of the audience as well. So I think the structure that is being proposed protects, hopefully, you know, you never know. And remember, when this proposal was made, it was a different administration. And so, as Stuart stated, you know, government and, you know, everyone's averse to more funds, more people, regular, you know, they want smaller governments, regardless of party or whatever. So I think this is, you know, this is wise. And I hope, you know, we don't go in separate, completely separate with 2 EDs and all of that. So that's just my personal take on this situation, having been on this board for a while. So.
Any other questions, comments, concerns?
So what is our step at this point, Ms. Pakkinen? Do you need a motion?
Not at this time. I have an assignment, an exercise that I have mentioned that I need to bring back to you. So AZ ABBA and Ms. Petronin and Mr. Goodman, they will move forward, you know, with what they need to do. We'll continue to collaborate together, you know, in terms of when the hearings are held and, you know, all the things, much the same way that ASPA has briefed the board, you know, pretty consistently month to month. I'm sure we're going to see our guests come back frequently and, you know, keep the board informed along the way. And of course, I track legislation. At some point, you know, a letter from the board is probably, you know, appropriate. So we can, again, we can have that discussion as late as the December meeting or next month if you prefer.
Thank you, Ms. Pakkinen. And I, again, want to reiterate how appreciative I am of the hours and hours of hard work that goes into this, both from our staff's perspective, but also from, you know, Ms. Patron and Mr. Goodman and Ms. Belokas. Like, all of you have worked very hard on this, and I commend your efforts on this issue. I'm sure we'll keep chatting and keep seeing each other in the near future. Seems like we don't have to take any action, so there isn't going to be any motion. Thank you again for being here, and yeah, let's take it forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate you having us on today.
So I think we are past noon, and Ms. Pakkinen, what's your recommendation? Or actually, Dr. Malott, what's your availability?
You know, I would like to join the next session, which I think starts at 12:30. I didn't know whether you need to do the election of the secretary, whether that's a quick item, if you had volunteers.
I'm looking at this point. It's, yeah, I mean, we can. What do you think, Ms. Pakkinen?
Perfectly fine if you want to do that today. It should take just a couple of minutes.
Okay.
And Ms. Pakkinen, members of the board, Mr. Dinar, if we aren't going to complete the rest of the agenda, I know there's a number of individuals who are on for additional matters. Is it prudent to let them know that their matter is going to be heard at a future meeting?
Yes.
Dr. McGrady is here. Ms. Patain.
So I would say the matters that we have not covered so far, except for the election of the secretary for the remainder of the year, will be moved to a future meeting item, to a future meeting, and then board staff will get in touch with you to schedule those. We apologize for not getting to all of those items. We have, you know, we have to work with a quorum. So I appreciate all of you being here.
I wanted to know, excuse me, does number 12 have a time constraint? That was the only one I wondered about. Was there a time?
The motion to quash?
Yes. I don't know. Maybe Ms. Galvin knows if that's something that has to be done quickly or not.
He is well past his time within which he was to respond to the subpoena. So I don't know that another month or a few weeks would change that.
That was the only one I wondered about.
It may be done quickly. I don't know in the board's reading of the materials if they think it'll take a significant amount of time to address.
Thank you.
So I think at this point, let's move everything that's remaining to the next meeting, or, you know, to a future meeting. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. If there's opposition, I am not hearing it. The motion passes. We are adjourned. It is 12:22 p.m. Thank you, everybody, board members, board staff.